Hey, it's Kathy. Before we get into today's episode, I have something so cool to tell you about. I'm kicking off a free training. It's a free 5-day abundance activation challenge. It starts on May 6th, and I'll be going live every day with you to give you the practical tools that you need to become a master manifester and create more abundance in your life. If you're curious about manifesting and elevating your vibration to start attracting more abundance, if you want tools you can use to tap into the high vibe energy at the drop of a hat, or you're simply seeking truth and joy in life, this challenge is designed for you. I'll be covering the practices and tools to tune your vibration, claim your worth, and co-create with the universe. It's just going to be so much fun. This is the thing that I have been most excited to put together, and I have been working on this behind the scenes really for the last 2 years, and it's finally here. And if you wanted to just do a deep dive into all the spiritual and all the energetic tools that really you can use that are right here, that are within you, that will allow all these incredible gifts that are hidden in plain sight already to start being a part of your life. I'm so excited for this. We always have so much fun, but this is actually something I've been working on for over 2 years, and it's finally here. So save your spot now. You can sign up for free at kathyheller.com/5-day, and that's the number 5.
We need to just get back to who really am I? And when we realize that my I and your I are connected to that one, we would move from that terrible feeling of aloneness and alienation and this feeling of being threatened to realize that we are not competing with each other. We're here to be completing each other.
Hey guys, it's Kathy Heller. Welcome to the podcast Abundant Ever After with Kathy Heller. So you may have noticed that we changed the artwork and we changed the name of this podcast. And this is a long time coming. I have wanted to do this for over 2 years, and it is finally the day. So I am really excited to be choosing this alignment. For so long, it has been clear to me that the thing that I really want to talk about more than anything else is how we are each vessels for abundance, and that it is within our reach to perceive greater and to be able to tune our vibration to be there to allow for what is already here to be revealed. There are all these potentials and all these possibilities that are already here, but they're hidden in plain sight because it has to do with our ability to perceive them. It has to do with our vibration because we live in an atomic world and everything is made of frequency. Everything's made of vibration. And it's our job to really just continue to be in that receptive mode, to create our frequency so that it's this incredibly elevated frequency, this incredibly elevated vibration that allows us to bring abundance right into our experience. It already exists. It already exists. And so you're going to be hearing from me every Monday. There'll be an episode and we'll be talking about what is the law of reception? How do we manifest? How do we become incredible creators? How do we find these levels of well-being and love and compassion and creativity and flow state within ourselves? And how do we then become a ripple for that in the world? Because as Rabbi David Aaron says, because we are some of the one, we are part of this whole, part of this collective. And the more that we come into this higher state of consciousness, the more that we create well-being for the whole. So it's only fitting that the guest today, as we kick off this rebrand, is Rabbi David Aaron himself. I am really happy that he's here, not only because he's the greatest teacher in my life, but also because this week happens to be the week of Passover. And there's so much that we can tap into that is powerful for us in this holiday. And he's going to be talking about love, and he's going to be talking about connection to the divine and connection to one another. And I think that this episode will feel like medicine. We're going to be doing a giveaway. And to celebrate this new rebrand, I'd love for you guys to get in on that. We'll be choosing 8 of you, and each of you will win a $25 gift card to Starbucks. And also each of you will win a ticket for free to my summit. And I would love to see you there. In order to enter the giveaway, you can go to Instagram to get the details. But essentially, all you have to do is leave a review for the podcast and then share one of my reels on your Instagram stories. You can head to the podcast to let us know that you're entering, and we'll be choosing winners on Friday. I hope that you enjoy this conversation. I hope that this podcast will continue to help you find within yourself the magic that has always been there and help you set down any resistance so that you can allow for the most beautiful world, the most beautiful experiences to be created through your awareness and through your capacity to receive more goodness. So I hope that you enjoy.
We are now in the week of Passover, right? We're in this holiday time. And as you shared with me, the idea of us being freed from Egypt wasn't for freedom's sake. It was for a purpose. And that purpose was receiving the Torah, right? We left Egypt and then went to Mount Sinai with Moses, and we were given this incredible conscious blueprint. And when people say Jews are chosen, I think the way that we understand that is we're choosing to be part of this mission, which is to bring this consciousness. What about that do you think Jews need to be more aware of and the world needs to be more aware of in terms of what is this consciousness that we wanted to teach the world?
You know, the consciousness is the true meaning of freedom. We all yearn for freedom, but we don't all have the ultimate understanding of what freedom is. First of all, I think a lot of people think that freedom was an idea that always was around in this world, but it's very possible it wasn't. When Moses went to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go," he had no clue what he was talking about. Because in that world, might makes right. And if I can enslave you, then I have the right to enslave you. What is this crazy idea called freedom? So most people think that Passover is a celebration of the Jewish people's freedom from slavery of Egypt. But no, it's actually the birth of the very idea and the very value of freedom itself, the very concept of freedom itself. And so that's the first thing we have to understand, that until that story, it's very possible that even we know the idea of freedom. Is it possible that before that story, the world never heard of the idea of freedom? Freedom was not a word. It wasn't a concept. It was an ideal. You don't free slaves. If you can enslave them, then you have every right to do that because, you know, we live in a jungle. But what really is freedom? When we get out of Egypt, we're free from oppression. We're free from having to do what somebody else is telling us to do. When we receive the Torah at Sinai, we're free to expression. Because I know what I don't want to do. I don't want to do what you're telling me to do and live your life. But does that mean I know what I want to do and live my life? And that's the harder freedom. Because a big part of that freedom is the freedom of the little Pharaoh inside us called ego. And that's one of the ideas behind the matzah that we eat, that yeast is described in our tradition as the urge to doing evil, which in modern psychological terms would be more what we would call ego, the self-centeredness. And we want to get over that. And so the truth is that we could get up in the morning, we could be free to go wherever we want, but we could still be a slave because we really don't know where we want to go, where we in our deepest depths want to go. And we become a slave to what media has taught us or maybe what our friends have taught us. And the question is, what really is freedom? Freedom is to be the true you. It's called beautiful. You know, beautiful is to be beautiful. And that is through freedom. And the freedom to be who I am. And the big lesson in this story here is who I am is not an island, and you're not an island. You know, the problem with the world is it's all about me and it's not about us. And we got to move from the me to the we. And that's what happens when you're a slave to your ego and you're slave to this self-centeredness, the self-absorption. That's slavery. And the goal of the Torah's light is to guide us, to release ourselves from this foreign voice inside us telling us to do what we feel like doing rather than being free to do what's right. And most people think that freedom is to do what I feel like doing. Animals do what they feel like doing. That's not freedom. They're enslaved to their instincts. Freedom is to do what you don't feel like doing, but you do it anyways because it's right, because it's good, because it's love.
It's so powerful and it's so true because most people that we all know, especially in societies where there is freedom, are not free because what's happening in their mind feels terrible. And like you said, the mind can take you into a million different places that feels awful. And then there's this more elevated state of consciousness, which is where real freedom exists. And that is in a state of oneness. And that is in a knowing of what your purpose is at every moment. It seems to me like you just said, right? We're all part of the we. We're all part of this collective. And whenever there's any kind of war or discord in the world, that is obviously no longer something that anyone who's perpetuating that doesn't recognize that there's a oneness, right? That we're all part of one.
We all need each other.
How do we get back to fully embodying and knowing that? What would cause somebody to not know that we're all part of this one collective, this one ultimate self?
Well, it would be a journey of deep self-awareness. If my finger were aware of itself, it would know that it's part of a hand, which is part of an arm, which is part of a body, which is part of a soul called David Aaron. If it really was aware of itself, and Rav Kook has a beautiful teaching that there's holy selfishness and there's unholy selfishness. Unholy selfishness is when I'm stuck in this little me, which I call being miserable. You know, I'm just stuck in the me. But holy selfishness is to realize that if I really care about myself, if my finger really cared about itself, it would care about the hand, care about the arm, care about the body. Because without the hand, without the arm, without the body, I can't be at all. And so true love is a very refined kind of selfishness. And it's a beautiful selfishness. I love you because how can I not? You're a part of me and I'm a part of you. How can I not love you? You know, Friedrich Nietzsche said that morality is doomed for bankruptcy because it's asking people to go against their fundamental instinct, which is to be selfish. Rav Kook says, I agree with you that the fundamental instinct of man is to be selfish. But the true selfishness is when you care about everybody, because if you really were selfish, you would know that without everybody, you're nobody.
It's fascinating because I feel like there's so much that if you had the ability to talk to the whole world right now, there are so many other potentials of other things they could think and other ways they could see the world that would actually set them free and give them so much meaning, so much purpose. What would you want to instill in the world and in people's hearts and in people's minds that you think would help us to repair and heal, especially now, but in general too?
Well, wouldn't it be amazing if we could all just sit down and look deeply into each other's eyes for even 5 minutes and realize, I'm not your enemy. I'm not against you. I don't want to hurt you. I have no reason to hurt you. If we do this together, it'll be so amazing for all of us. And so people are coming from a place of fear and fear of losing that little me rather than the fear of losing that expansive we. And if we could just sit down and not even talk, but just start off with just looking deeply into each other's eyes and realize I'm real. My heart is pulsating from the same source of life that yours is. And on the deepest level, you know, the other day, my wife and I were visiting for Shabbat with my son, and there was this enormous tree, this fabulous tree that was so wide and tall, and it was certainly thousands and thousands of little leaves. I thought to myself, each and every one of us is one of those leaves. And imagine one leaf on all the way on the right side, hating the leaf all the way on the left side and not realizing we all have the same root. We're all connected to the same life force. That's the oneness of what we call God. And it just goes back to a deep self-awareness. You know, it's one thing to say these ideas. It's another thing to be able to own it as a state of mind. We can talk that talk, but we need to so own it that this is our state of mind. It is love-mindedness. And I'm always looking for an opportunity to love. Even when we're at war, it shouldn't come from a place of hate. It comes from a place I I'm just trying to protect myself and even protect you from causing yourself even greater harm that will last from here to eternity, you know? And so I just want to rid myself of all hate. And I remember one teacher of mine said, the world will transform, people will love more than they love hate. Because there are people that are loving to hate, and that's just disastrous. That's so disastrous. And we need more of this talk, and it just seems so simple, and it seems maybe shallow. Yeah, love. And, you know, all you need is love. It's easy. No, it's not easy. If it was easy, then we would be there already. It's not easy because we've got big egos, and we've got wounded pasts, and we're struggling with never feeling enough and trying to feel enough by making other people feel less. And we need to just get back to who really am I? And when we realize that my I and your I are connected to that one, I once realized that the word alone is really the same word of all one, if you just add another L, you know? And we would move from that terrible feeling of aloneness and alienation and this feeling of being threatened to realize that we are not competing with each other. We're here to be completing each other.
It's absolutely stunning and gorgeous and such a gift to even witness and listen to you speak those gorgeous concepts and truths that you embody so beautifully. And it reminds me of the King Solomon story when these two mothers ostensibly went and said, this is my son. And they both had claims to this baby. And King Solomon, to sort of see what would happen, made this ridiculous comment, like, let's just split the baby in half. And one of the mothers said she could have the baby. And King Solomon said, well, then you must be the mother. And it's just nothing short of a mesmerizing wonder of the world to see you right now in real time, sitting in the old city of Jerusalem, and the thing coming out of your mouth is, let's find more oneness, let's love more. It seems to me that that is the most powerful argument to be made for where we need to look to as what is the real guide, where's the real truth in this situation, what really feels like the side of goodness and what we all need to come together on. I'm curious, you know, I had the absolute mazal and good fortune to meet you 24 years ago and learn from you, and all of those things completely and totally changed me, changed my life, brought me back to exactly who I want to be and what I think I was made to be. And one of the things I learned from you is that the word lekabel, the word Kabbalah, comes from the word lekabel, which means to receive, to be a vessel. And I'm curious, if that is the mission, that we all become a vessel, what does that mean to you? Why is that such a mission statement of humanity?
You know, I see ourselves as radios. In the room right now is beautiful music, but I don't hear it, because I don't have a radio that's plugged in, turned on, and tuned in to the music. And we're supposed to be those radios that tune in and get onto the frequency so we can receive and transmit that broadcast, or in this case, the Godcast. And there's only one song playing, and that's a song of love. There's no other song that's playing. But when you're a radio and you're not tuned in, what are you going to hear? Terrible noise. And you're going to turn to your friend and say, I can't take this noise. It's driving me crazy. What is this noise? And the other guy says, the other radio says, what noise? What are you talking about? I don't hear noise. I hear a beautiful love song. And he says, no, what are you talking about? There's noise. He said, no, you know, you're not, I think you're not tuned in. And he said, tuned in, what's that mean? So, well, we're radios. We're radios. And what we need to do is we need to plug in, turn on, and tune in and get into that frequency of the love song. And it's all, and it's only supposed to be about love.
Yeah, it's 100% true. I want to go back to another point that you made about love. And you said, it's a love song that's playing. And you said, it seems like a simple thing to say, but it's actually not. I don't know anyone who's better at talking about defining or teaching what love is than you. And I think that that is inherently the education that we're missing. I was talking to someone recently about this, and she said, well, I don't know if I love that person so much. And I said, well, that's a choice. So what the heck is love? Because all of these directors, some of them are great at making movies, Nora Ephron, Rob Reiner, they make these really cute romantic comedies. And I feel like we've been taught something about love. And then there's actually what love is. And I don't know that they're the same as what we've been taught. What does it mean to you to hear a love song? What does it mean to you to be the love song?
So, you know, the golden rule that the Torah brought to the world is love your neighbor as yourself. And very often people don't realize that that's predicated on loving yourself, because I know a lot of people, I prefer they not love me the way they love themselves, do a little better job than that. So the first thing is, the strange thing is to really, really love myself. But to love myself, I got to know, who am I? As I mentioned before, my finger, if it would love itself, it would surely love the entire body, because it would know that in and of itself, it's nothing. So the first thing is to really begin to deeply understand, who is the self? Who really am I? But most people don't realize that that famous phrase, love your neighbor as yourself, actually has two more words to it. I am God. Actually, well, in Hebrew, it's two words, but in English, it comes out to be three. I am God. But it doesn't even say I am God. It says the word, the tetra, which is in Hebrew, the yud, then the hey, then the vav, the hey, which really means I am all there ever was, is, and ever will be, which means there is only one I am. If we realize that there is only one I am, and your I am and my I am are branches of or streams flowing from one I am, how could we not love each other? So loving another person is an emotion that you feel when you deeply realize and experience that we are one. We cannot not be one. It's too late. It never will be different than that. We're all someone, some of that one. And each and every one of us is someone of the one, which is what we call God. And if we get to that deep self-awareness that myself is a part of a greater self that I share with all of mankind, then the realization of that and the practice of that truth, you know, when it says love your neighbor as yourself, you can't have a commandment of an emotion. No one can tell you feel this. So love your neighbor as yourself is an action. Speak in a loving way, even if you don't feel like it. Act in a loving way, even if they annoy you. But when you act and talk in a loving way, then you will not be faking it till you make it, but you'll be faking it till you awake it. Because deep inside, we will awaken to the truth of who we are and who we're a part of. We're part of that one self, and each and every one of us is a different color in the spectrum of that light of total oneness. But most people, their understanding of love, or to be more correct, the misunderstanding of love is that, you know, who's going to serve my needs? How are they going to compliment me? What can they do for me? When love is, what can I do for you? And if it's all about what I can get from them, then that's not love, that's business. And, you know, in business, it's not nice to say, but if one company is providing a service, but you can get it cheaper and faster and better from some other company, you leave the company. And that, I think, is the problem of many, many marriages, that the foundation of the marriage is really a business deal. It's what will I get from you? Okay, what will I give to you? But still, there's a transaction going on over here rather than an action of love. And we need to get out of this business model of what I can get from you. You know, under the wedding canopy in Jewish tradition, the groom gives his wife a ring and says, Hariat mikudeshet li. You are sacred to me. Sacred means you're not here for my use. You know, on Hanukkah, we say, Nero talalu kodesh ham, these candles are holy. We're not allowed to use them. What makes something holy is it's not here for your use. I'm not here to use you. My sister was on a date before she was married, and the guy asked her, do you like to cook? She said, no. He said, do you like to clean? She said, no. Huh, do you like to do laundry? She said, no. She said, can I ask you a question? He said, sure. She said, is this a business interview? I'm not looking for a job. You know, so people have got this insane think that what can I get from this person? And it's not about using another person. And when you're here to use people, that's the beginning of abusing people also. And so we got to get into this mindset. And it just starts off with, if every one of us could just today on our phone send a few kind words to one person, that would change the world. You know, we think that it's the big things that change the world. Ruff Cook says that great people do small things in great ways. And it's really the love is in the details. And if we could just begin to speak in a loving way and act in a loving way, then we're not faking it till we make it. We're faking it until we awaken.
It's absolutely beautiful. And something that you just said so clearly is, if we're supposed to love our neighbor like ourselves, what you really just shine such a light on is that we don't know what the self is. If you're supposed to love your neighbor like yourself, but you are identified with your ego, you're in that constant hypervigilant fight or flight mode of thoughts that is all egotistical, self-serving, because that's what the ego does. It wants to keep you safe, and it's all about you, 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 you. If you don't know what the self is with a capital S, which is that you are a lightning rod, a conduit for love. You are here to be a vessel for God's love. You are here to be an extension of that. If you don't know that, then it is very difficult to love someone as yourself if the self is an ego that is thinking, what's in this for me? And it's fascinating because when I work with and speak to thousands and thousands of people a year, it's very fascinating how quickly somebody goes from feeling lack and sadness and scarcity to feeling fullness. And that change is always when I help them unpack what it is that they really want. And we realize through a conversation that they don't want a pile of things. They don't want a list of people's approvals. They actually want the feeling of their own inner peace. They have much bigger dreams than wanting things from outside of themselves to make them feel whole. They want the feeling of wholeness from within. They want a mystical experience. They want to feel connected to the divine. And all of that comes from being connected to the real self, because the ego will constantly make you see through separation, and therefore it's a lose-lose. You'll never arrive. There's no arriving from that place. So what does that bring up for you that you would want to remind people of, that the Torah instructs us, that the work of the Zohar and the Talmud, like what are some things that help us to remember who we are and remember what we're here for?
Well, look, you know, everybody wants to feel good about themselves. Nobody wants to feel bad about themselves. We all want to feel good about ourselves. And I once thought of this theoretical situation. What if a person had a choice that they could be loved or they could love, but they couldn't have both? They couldn't have both. So which would you choose, to be loved or to love? Now, of course, this is not a choice, and God willing, we could have both. But just theoretically, so we can understand what really, really makes us feel good about ourselves. And I thought about it, you know, it hit me when my daughter got married. And it surprised me how kind of easy it was for her to move on and move out and start a life with a man that I barely know. And I've been in her life all these years. And I realized that when you love somebody, you feel part of that person. When you are loved by someone, you don't feel as much part of that person. And so all these years I've been loving her, but she didn't have that much, opportunity to love me because, you know, the child. And so we love our children, and it's hard to say this, but it's the truth. We love our children more than our children love us. Why? Because we give to them. And when you give to someone, you get beyond yourself. You invest in that person. They become a part of you. You become expanded. We feel actually happier when we're giving love than when we're receiving love. And we should get both, God willing. We should all be blessed with both. But if a person would understand that really what's going on is people want to be lovable, you know, and they're spending a lot of time being lovable by hoping that if I look good, And if I say the right things, and if I have this kind of a house, or I have this kind of a car, or if I got this kind of a job, or I have these kind of friends, I'll be loved. And I'm looking for just lovability rather than the ability to love. And that's the problem, is we're too much wanting to be loved than wanting to love, and not realizing that we'd actually be much happier loving than being loved. And God willing, both will happen in our lives. I'm not against being loved. I love being loved. But what we really love more than being loved is loving itself.
There was an amazing study on happiness that is one of the longest studies that Harvard ever did. And it was on happiness and what makes people happy. And of course, when people came through the study, they thought that the things that would make them happy, they were asked, what would those things be? And more money, you know, better this, better that, all the things that they thought that if those things were given to them, they would be happier. And so, of course, when they went through this study and they actually put them through different situations where they were given the things that they thought they wanted, you know, some people wanted more sleep, some people wanted more money, some people wanted better food, some people wanted better conditions and where to live. They simulated situations so that people would have the experience that they thought would make them happy. And it turned out that it didn't. And then they put them through a series of exercises where they gave happiness to other people. And they asked them at the end, and it was so obvious. And it wasn't just obvious on their faces, but they did blood work and they did psychological evaluations, and everything about them improved. And Rabbi Daniel Cohen, who is a mutual friend of ours who lives in Stamford, Connecticut, told me a story that one of his friends wanted to be lifted up. She was feeling she was in a slump. And so he said, why don't you go do something nice for somebody? And she happened to find this opportunity to be part of something called NODA, N-O-D-A, which is No One Dies Alone. You can volunteer to sit with someone who doesn't have friends or family, who's in the last moments of their life.
Wow.
So she went and sat with this man who was dying, who she had never met. And she went every day for weeks until he passed. And every day she was more in love with the experience than the one before. And she would put ice chips in his mouth and stroke his hand. And no one was there, no family, no friends. And she cried so hard the day that he passed. And she said to her mother on the phone, you have no idea what this experience was for me. And I can't tell you why I was sobbing. I didn't even know this person. And the mom happened to ask her, what was his name? And she shared it. And she said, do you know that that person that you just shared, he's the OBGYN that delivered you.
Oh my God. Whoa.
She said, what did you just say? Mother said, he brought you into the world and you helped him leave this world.
Wow.
And the levels of epicness in that story, because she didn't even need to know that. And it just happened to be that. But the gift in loving someone for no reason, I mean, that is the ultimate defining lesson of my life, which you taught me, that love is for no reason. And being able to give away love for no reason makes you happier and more fulfilled, because you emulate God when you do that.
You more than emulate God, you are literally a channel for the presence of God, because the very presence of God is love. I'm not saying that love is God, but God is manifest as love, as peace, as truth, as kindness. And when we become channels for love and all the ingredients of love, then we are full, and by helping others be full. And you know, we're in a world that it's all about being a go-getter when we really need to learn to be go-givers.
It brings me back to something else that we've talked about so often, which is so obvious in this conversation, which is that the opposite of depression is not necessarily happiness, but purpose. And I think that when people don't feel needed, or that their life contributes, that their life mattered to someone else, it's very easy to kind of get off track and to have your mind kind of consume you. And then the purpose could become hate, or the purpose could become negativity. But when you think about the conversation we're having right now and how every day is an opportunity, like a playground of how many people's lives could you insert love into? And how at the end of the day, when you go to sleep at night, could that make you feel so full that you had the ability to improve someone else's life? I think that that's really what you're teaching. That's what you become. You are a billboard. You are a walking model of that possibility. And I think that's what people deeply need to know, that God needs you here, that there is something about that. So can you say something for people who really think that that sounds nice, but don't really believe that? How can we know that we're needed if God is God and we're just little old us? It's very easy to compare ourselves then to other people who maybe seem more needed or more impressive. And meanwhile, we have this ego that is all about me, me, me. So between those two things, we don't think there's much for us to offer. And then the ego tells us, here's what I need that I'm lacking. And it winds up being a recipe for a lot of static. So what do you think could be helpful in people hearing? Is there anything in the text, or is there anything that comes from this very, very old, very beautiful wisdom of Jewish tradition that helps us know that we're needed, that helps us know that actually what we're saying doesn't just sound good, but it is true?
Well, you know, what comes to my mind is, imagine you're on a plane and there's an announcement on the plane, is there a doctor on board? And when you hear something like that, you realize that somebody is in bad shape. And, you know, imagine I run up to the stewardess and say, how can I help? I'm a rabbi. And she says, sir, this man is having a heart attack. I don't need a rabbi. I need a doctor. Oh, so I'm not needed. And then the next guy runs up. He says, how can I help? I'm an artist. I'll paint his picture. You know, no, no, sir, we need a doctor. Oh, so I'm not needed. No, you are needed as a vehicle for beauty in the world. But in this situation, we need to save this man's life. Everybody has been gifted with a ability. And our Torah teaches us that nobody, just like your fingerprint will never be repeated in all of history, your soul print will never be repeated in history. There's something that you can give. And I don't want to say to the world, because that makes us say, well, if it's only to a lot of people, then it's not needed. It's not important. It could be just one person that literally changes the world because you did that for that one person. Every single one of us has something unique that we can contribute. And you said that God needs us. It's actually much deeper than even that, because there's two kinds of love. There's mature love and immature love. Immature love is the love of children. I love my parents because I need them. But mature love is, I need you because I love you. When you enter into a marriage, you're choosing to need somebody. That's what love is. God didn't need to need us. It's something, you know, when you're dating someone, you don't want someone who's needy. What do you mean you don't want somebody you need? You want someone that needs you? No, I want someone that needs me, but doesn't need to need me. They choose to need me. So really, in the deepest teachings, God loves us and chooses to need us. And we are here to deliver a package. You know, it's not FedEx, it's GodEx. You know, there's somebody in this world that God has asked us to deliver a package of love. I don't know what that package looks like. It might be finances. It might be listening. It might be a hug. I don't know. But everybody is a delivery man, a delivery woman. And we're here to deliver God's love to the world. God chooses to need us and to help others find how they can also be a need to somebody else.
It's so beautiful. You know, I've had this experience for the last 24 years. When I hear you speak, I cry, because I think tears for me, and maybe for other people, it's a recognition of your soul recognizing truth. It's a way in which my whole being remembers to remember what's true. And so tears come, because there's no words that match You know, I remember when you shared with me that we all think that love is earned, which is so much a part of this whole conversation. And you said, when you have a child, what did you do to earn their hands? What was it? What did you do to earn their face? And what's inherent in that is how much God loves us, how much we're given that we didn't have to earn. And we have this mind that comes from ego that's constantly perpetuating what's lacking, that we almost don't even have a relationship to deeply receiving what's already here and how much love. And I want you to speak to that, because the other side of the same exact coin is how much God is loving us all the time. And I think there is so much misinformation, the way people think about and carry shame about who they are, that part of what holds them back from loving other people the way they love themselves is a deep feeling of shame and inadequacy and not feeling loved by their creator. And therefore, it perpetuates the state of being where they can't come into wholeness because they don't deeply know that they're loved in and of themselves just because. What do you want them to know about that? And how can you let people know that God does love us when they're so convinced that there's no way that that's true?
Well, you know, first thing is, the way we celebrate Passover is by telling the story. We're celebrating freedom by telling a story, because the key to freedom is the story you tell yourself and the story you tell other people. And we don't realize how free we are in deciding what that story is. I could choose to tell myself a story that I'm worthless, that I'll never be enough, and that I'm hated, and that I am abandoned by the universe and by God. I could tell my story that if I look myself deeply in the eyes and I realize how just one eyeball is incomprehensibly miraculous, and I got two of them for free, not to mention my ears and my brain, and realize if I woke up in the morning and someone left at my door $1 million, would I think someone must hate me, you know, because they must hate me that they want to drop $1 million on my porch and dirty my porch. And now I got to clean up the $1 million. You know, you wake up every morning and you got this gift of life that just came to you that you did nothing for. And you're asking, does somebody love me? You know, does somebody love me? I don't want to be unfair. There's a lot of pain going on, a lot of pain going on, but that's what we can choose to look at. I'm not denying the pain. I'm not struggling with it, and I'm not being disrespectful towards, yes, there are people in pain, but it's a story you tell yourself. Am I a victim or am I blessed? And am I more blessed? And maybe someday I'll be able to see that even the pain that I went through was actually coming from a loving creator who was setting me up for greatness. I call it, when people share with me that they're in a terrible situation, I say, well, you've just entered into Soulympics, not the Olympics, the Soulympics. And your loving coach is training you for enormous greatness, to contribute in a way and to make a difference that you can't even imagine right now. And someday, with 2020 hindsight, you'll see that it was always and it was only blessing, and it was always and only love. It's hard to see it, but at least we should start looking at the things. You know, I'm thinking about the splitting of the sea. And, you know, wow, that's a miracle. Wow, it's a miracle. But that's so interesting. Let's say the sea split and we'd all be blown away. Next day, it splits again. We go, oh, wait a second. That happened yesterday. Then the next day, it splits again. It says, oh, this is just nature. So this just happens every day. So, like, we got it all wrong. We think nature is unimpressive and miracles are proof of God. And yet, if a miracle happens every single day, then why has that now become nature and not a super miracle? And why is it that when something is repeated, it becomes less appreciated rather than more shockingly beautiful and wondrous, and we should be thankful for it? And so just to be able to move my hands should really be enough for me to say, okay, somebody loves me, because I didn't know how to do this on my own. I don't even know how to do any of this on my own. I don't even know how to talk. I didn't teach myself to talk. And the love in my heart, I didn't teach my heart to love, and I didn't invent love in the first place. It's just something that visits my heart and seeks to be bursting out of my heart to other people. And if that's not love, what is?
You know, this time that we're in, we're all in it, right? So you don't have to be celebrating Passover to still be in the energy of this time. And I've heard it said that Abraham wrote, they believe, this book, the Sefer Yetzirah, which is like carbon dated to be one of the oldest writings of the zodiac, which are the orders of the stars. And apparently it's been said that he sort of authored this. And why that makes sense to me is because there's an energy to every month. There's an energy to it. And the Jewish calendar follows that lunar calendar of the months, of the stars. And so this month, you know, a lot of people do spring cleaning. A lot of people start to feel something that feels new. And so whether you're Jewish and celebrating Passover, which, by the way, I've heard that's the oldest, most consecutive, longest tradition of any religious practice, is the Passover Seder, that more people have celebrated that and kept that for thousands and thousands of years, more than like anything else, which is awesome. But whether you're doing it or not, there is an energy in this time that we're all collectively experiencing, just the way we all experience an energy in winter. So what is the energy that everyone can tap into, the energy of freedom, in the sense that you really mean freedom, that we know what freedom is about? What can we tap into? What is more available in this time than typically available that would be healthy and helpful for the world to tap into?
Well, I think it's the energy of spring. And it's interesting, even the word springing out, it's like we're in this dark time, this cold time. Winter is over, and the time is now to break free from the darkness, break free from that feeling of loneliness, and break free of the addictions to my past, my obsession with what was, and break free and spring into a new orbit of realization of possibilities. And that's what freedom is about, that I don't have to keep telling myself this same sad story. I can write a new ending that will make the whole story a completely new story. And it won't even be an ending either. It'll just be a new chapter that everything retroactively will suddenly make a new sense. And it will just be awesome.
I love that so much. And, you know, sometimes I think about how we experience a day as 24 hours because we are sitting in this geography in the universe where we have a rotation of the sun and the earth. But if you went to Jupiter, a day is not 24 hours. A day is 9 hours and 58 minutes because of the distance between Jupiter and the sun. And if you go outside of our solar system, an hour is 26 seconds. And where I'm going with this is, if you zoom out of this little, the universe is very, 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 very big, right? So if you zoom out and you move location in the universe, time evaporates completely. And so from God's time, it's only now.
Yes.
And so in that now, the past and the present and the future are one moment. And so in God's experience, when you zoom out of time, and there is no time in the fifth dimension, it's beyond time and space, beyond gravity, beyond everything we experience in this particular location, literally, what is that vision that God's already experiencing beyond time and space, right? Like, what is that? Because that is existing now somewhere. Somewhere that now is already now. Somewhere that possibility you just spoke of is already happening simultaneously. And what do you think, from God's perspective, that looks like? And what do you think is the lesson God is hoping that we get in this moment to allow us to be in that now?
Beautiful. You know, the word that is identified or means translated as God is the tetragrammaton, which is the Hebrew letters Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey. And actually what that stands for is was, is, and forever will be. And one of the ideas about that is, from God's perspective, the past, the was, the is, and the will be are all now. And it's like, imagine you're an ant walking across a painting. Where you are is the present, where you were was the past, and where you're going is the future. But we, looking at the painting, see it all now, right? History is a painting, and we're walking across the painting, and we can choose how we want to walk across this painting. We can hang out on all the dark lines and think it's all black and dark and sad. But the truth is, from God's perspective, it's all now. And we, in order to tune into God, we also have to be on the frequency of now. And love is on the frequency of now. When you love somebody or when you love what you're doing, you are immersed in who you are with and what you are doing now. And you don't love somebody later and say, well, I loved you then. It's a complete merging of we are together in this now. You know, it's space that separates us. Where you are and where I am is separate. But right now, we are all in this moment right now. This now is uniting us. And when we're in the nowness, you know, when we, so to speak, I call it nowing ourselves, there'll just be so much love because we are not separate. We are like one dot, which is inseparable. You know, mathematically, a dot is inseparable. It's not made of any parts. It's a dot. And we live in this dot of called the now, this moment. And that's where love is going to happen, when we're with each other now and know that we cannot not be with each other because we're a part of each other.
It's so mesmerizing and beautiful. And I hope that we will all continue to look through the lenses of the beautiful vision and the beautiful altitude, the frequency that you bring us all to. I hope that we will continue to meet each other in love in that place. I just want to, from the bottom of my heart, just thank you for being you.
And from the bottom of my heart, for being you and us being us together.
Thank you so much. And God bless you. And
Amen.
Am Yisrael Chai. Thank you, everybody, for coming on.
Shalom, shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Aaron. God bless.
Shalom, shalom.